Hi, everyone. Welcome to Name Drop San Diego. Name Drop is all about the fascinating people in, around, and from San Diego. I'm Christy Totten, and my guest today is Beth Demon. Beth is a San Diego-based freelance journalist who writes about beer and cider. She's had a bunch of amazing bylines, including Playboy, Vice, Thrillist, Eating Well, and the Union Tribune's very own Pacific Magazine. Beth is currently writing a book about ciders, and she also runs a podcast as well as a Substack newsletter about women and beer that is very cleverly called Prohibition. Beth's story about sexism in the craft beer industry made big waves this year, and we talk about how far the industry has come or not come in this episode. Here's my interview with Beth Demon. Beth, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. I wanted to ask just if you could start by sort of giving your short bio. You know, what is important to know about Beth Demon?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. And I guess a short bio. I was born in Long Beach, but I moved to Virginia, the DC area, when I was about 6 months old. So I grew up somewhat bi-coastally, visiting both sides of my family, anywhere from San Jose to San Diego. So really coming to California a lot my entire life, thought I might come to college here, ended up staying in Virginia for college. But when I graduated in 2008, I moved here really kind of on a whim with my boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband and father of our child. And so here we are. 13 years later, I do not have a journalism degree in college. I have a BFA in painting and printmaking. I had thought about double majoring in something like creative writing or something like that, but it already took me an extra year to get a painting degree. So I figured there was no point in extending my time or my debt, but
yeah.
But yeah, got into journalism in 2015 when I came on board at San Diego City Beat, RIP, as one of the beer columnists there. And then in 2016, I decided to leave my marketing job that I absolutely hated to pursue full-time freelance writing. So that's me in a bit of a nutshell. I like yoga. I have a scooter, not a Vespa, because I don't have enough money for a Vespa. yeah, that's it. That's me.
That's really cool. And I think it's really smart of you not to have pursued a journalism degree. As a person who has one, I wish that I would have just studied something different and written for the school paper and got into it that way. But, you know, okay. So San Diego, why did you choose it?
So I actually didn't choose it. My husband had been born and raised in Richmond, Virginia, and had never really lived anywhere else. I had at least traveled around, hopped around Virginia a little bit. And so he was looking for something new, just, you know, we were in our early 20s, why not? And he was looking at places like Boston, where his sister had gone to college, Florida, I have no idea why. And I basically said, if you're moving in any of those places, peace, like, we're not dating because I don't want to go there. And then I was visiting my grandparents in San Jose, and he flew out, just decided to come out. That was his first time in California. And he thought, hey, California seems pretty nice. Why don't we move here? San Francisco is a little pricey. So how does, you know, what, mm-hmm. where do you want to move? Anywhere in the world? Why not San Diego? It sounds great, right? And I thought, heck, you know, what's the worst that could happen? I've been there. I've got family there. If it doesn't work out, he's in trouble, but I'm fine. And luckily it worked out. So it was really not a lot of thought. And I'm, you know, 13 years later, I'm happy that it worked out, because it's wonderful. And I have no plans to leave.
Yeah, agree. Beautiful place. I'm so happy to be here too. I moved here about a year and a half ago, and I can't at this point picture the thing that would take me away from the city.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Well, so as a food and beverage writer, how do you assess San Diego? You know, like, what are the things that you like about it? You know, what are some of the strong points and what are some of the weak points in your opinion?
I think that we are a very underrated culinary destination. You know, we're very overshadowed by Los Angeles. I mean, that's just kind of a gimme, but I think that we really have unbelievable, not just quality of cuisine, but like range of it. And I mostly write about craft beer. So, I mean, this is one of the places that has more breweries than anywhere else in the entire world. And so many of them are great. I mean, genuinely putting out amazing quality craft beer all the time. And so I think, you know, just the sheer diversity and array of choices is something I really appreciate. And I kind of like that we aren't as recognized as some other places. You know, it's not totally trend driven or Instagram driven. I mean, we certainly have our fair share of that, but I kind of like that it seems like a very genuine place where people really enjoy their craft and sharing it with consumers.
How did you initially get into craft beer?
So, like so many other millennials, I was a blogger for years before moving into paying journalism gigs. And I had a food blog called The Delighted Bite, which is still the name of all of my social media handles. And it was really just something fun. I like taking pictures of food still to this day. I like seeing pictures of food. That's something I like in social media. But I moved here in 2008, and that was really a very similar time to when the kind of current wave of craft beer was really starting to take hold. And I lived in North Park. I lived there for 10 years. And so it was really just kind of right place, right time, accessibility. I was kind of in the middle of it all. And that first column in City Beat really was the springboard for my entire career. And from there, just doing a lot of freelance journalism work in the craft beer industry, it just kind of snowballed from there. And I, you know, since then I've become a certified beer judge. I'm working on becoming a cider judge, just making connections and really just over time getting to know the people who worked at Tornado, who, you know, opened Bottle Craft, the beer buyers there and things like that. It was, yeah, I mean, I would say it was definitely right place, right time, as well as just a passion for it. I mean, I am not a brewer. I have worked in restaurants and a number, you know, a small number of breweries before, but I don't make beer. I don't like home brewing personally, but you know, I can write about it, and I think that I have a decent palate with a decent amount of training behind it as well. So, yeah, luckily my passion and my profession have been intertwined in a way that I feel very lucky to enjoy.
Yeah, you're so lucky. It's like a dream job. I have to ask you. You mentioned you like taking food pictures. You like seeing food pictures. I definitely like seeing food pictures, but I'm not good at taking food pictures. Like, what is your advice to take better food pictures?
Oh my gosh. If you look at my Instagram, I'm not a good photographer. Like, I'm a good writer. I'm not a good photographer. I think the advice that most actually good photographers give is just using the right light. It's really hard to do in beer, I feel like, because so often it's, you know, in a dark bar or you're at, you know, a dim brewery. It's just not really conducive for taking a good photo. And I will admit, like a little too embarrassed to like haul around a ring light and stand on your seat. I can't do it. Like occasionally I'll like move my beer to the front window to get a little natural light, but I have no real good photography tips. Just, I like looking at other people's photos.
Well, I follow you. I think your photos are fine, but I agree. It's like, I always just feel too embarrassed to like, I'm afraid to turn up on influencers in the wild, you know, taking some ridiculous picture where you're standing on the chair and whatever. So I get that. Well, I have some questions here from Sonia Swanson. So Sonia Swanson and I had a food podcast in Las Vegas called Spicy Eyes, and it was all centered around food and culture in Vegas. So we did episodes on like Hawaiian food, Thai food, and, you know, the communities surrounding that, a bunch of others. But she recommended you to be on this podcast. We were already talking about it, but I said, you know, any recommendations I got, the recommender could add some questions. So her first question for you is, what is your favorite variety of hops?
Oh my gosh, my favorite variety of hops. I mean, That's like a crazy question. I feel like nobody's asked me that before. I mean, can I be super boring? Beer people will think this is a boring answer. Citra, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's good. It's good. But you know, Mosaic stands by itself. I don't really have like a cute, good, like, oh, this is the new cutting edge hop that everybody should be paying attention to. Simcoe is fun because it's like super easy to recognize. Like even a novice beer judge will be able to pick out Simcoe from a lineup. But I do like Fuggle because it's a really fun word. And I always thought that if I got a new pet, I would name it Fuggle just because it seems like a cute pet name. Totally. So that's my like cheat answer of like a couple different ones that I like.
Oh, that's a good answer. And I agree with you. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Classic is always a good way to go. Okay. And her second question is, do you have any recommendations for good non-alcoholic beers?
Yes, definitely. And I love that question because it really is becoming much more of a thing. And I mean, Athletic Brewing is, you know, they started in Connecticut, but they have a huge facility here in San Diego, and it's good. It's really good. I think some of their early stuff and a lot of the emerging brands in the non-alcoholic space have not totally nailed it. You know, like I had the Oktoberfest from Athletic. I think it was one of their very first batches that came out of San Diego, and it was okay. I wouldn't drink it over a regular Oktoberfest, but recently they had an IPA called Rainbow Wall that came out during Pride Month and was a collaboration and a fundraising beer to support LGBTQ athletes. And that it was amazing. I mean, I would genuinely buy that and drink it and enjoy it and recommend it to anybody. So, I mean, Athletic is setting the standard and we're lucky that they're here in San Diego.
That's really cool. Have you tried like CBD or THC beers at all?
I have. They are a totally different thing because you can't have any THC and alcohol. So if you see a, you know, quote unquote weed beer, it's just CBD. And I am not a cannabis reporter, so I don't know all of the kind of ins and outs of how, you know, CBD works. It doesn't strike me as, you know, it's not psychotropic. It's not going to get you high. So you kind of have to pick one or the other. It's not really my thing, but who knows? I mean, maybe it'll become more of a thing.
Sure. Okay. Well, so tell me more about your book you have coming out.
So I am working on a book proposal. I'm actually talking to a couple of agents right now, but I am hoping to put out a book really diving into the overlaps between craft beer and craft cider. If you look at these statistics, craft cider is really a very small segment of the alcohol beverage industry here in the United States, but it is absolutely exploding in growth. And I'm really excited about cider. Like one of my very best friends is a cider maker. I love going up to Calico just outside of Julian and Winola and trying their ciders. And when people talk about cider, the entryway is very often through wine because the techniques for making it are so similar. Whereas the end product, isn't really, you know, you can't really compare it super one-to-one with beer, but I think as more of Generation Z enters drinking age, the previously held like segment specific loyalty is really waning. I mean, my generation and the generations before me, it's like you are a wine drinker, you are a beer drinker, you are a spirits drinker, and you pretty much stuck within those segments. And that's just not really happening right now. And so I think there isn't really a comprehensive guide for if you like beer, you will probably like these ciders. And here is why, whether it just be ignorance of different palate sensations, or you think that cider is just kind of this alcopop, you know, quote unquote girly drink, or you just don't know about it. And I think it's a really, hopefully it would be an exciting way to kind of be a gateway between the appreciation of the craft beer world into the appreciation of a new beverage. So fingers crossed that that takes off, because those are really my two passions. And I really truly believe that cider is poised to make a much bigger impact than it has currently in the United States and drinking in general.
That's like super fascinating what you just said about Gen Z and, you know, generation sort of drinking different things. You know, I think we definitely think about like, oh, our grandfathers drank like domestic American, you know, domestic beers, but like,
right.
Yeah. I mean, what have drinking sort of cultural shifts and trends looked like, you know, over generations?
Well, now just look at things like hard seltzer or, you know, hard yerba mate, or even the THC drinks or the hop infused drink and just things like that. I mean, there is so much blurring of the lines between these alcohol segments right now. And people are definitely caring much less about the base spirit than they used to. But exactly like you said, you know, grandpa drank Hams in the Basement or Rolling Rock or Budweiser or whatever. And like, that's what they drank. And we all have our kind of go-tos. We all have our favorites. But if you look at who is the future of the drinking generation, they will try anything. And I think it's really exciting. So this just kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks is really, it's kind of a free for all right now. You know, Boston Beer, the people behind Sam Adams beer, they're pretty much just a Truly factory right now. Like their hard seltzer is keeping them afloat. So yeah, I think that we'll see and continue to see a lot of experimentation, a lot of just like weird, funky, alternative type beverages, ready to drinks, hard seltzers, things like that. And yeah, I think cider is certainly along for the ride, which is an interesting one because it's one of the oldest fermented beverages in the entire world. Mm-hmm. It has strong ties to colonial American times, but yeah, I think, you know, Europe and especially the UK, England, they've been enjoying cider on a level that really hasn't taken off in the United States, but I'm banking on it happening. Fingers crossed.
I can't believe I haven't asked you this, but what are your go-tos?
My go-tos? I really enjoy Weekend Vibes, which is an IPA from Coronado Brewing. And of course it has Mosaic, Citra, and Simcoe hops, which are some of the ones that I mentioned earlier. So that's always a go-to for me. I really like Bivouac ciders. They're nice and dry. Calico Cidery, like I mentioned earlier, theirs are amazing. Unfortunately, you have to go to their spot. I mean, well, not really, unfortunately. It's gorgeous and I love going up there, but getting a growler to go, it's not something you can get in stores. I enjoy a good hard kombucha, honestly. I mean, if I don't have enough time to go to the bottle shop and peruse for an hour like I used to before I had a kid, I'm going to the grocery store. I'm picking up what's mm-hmm. at Trader Joe's. So my go-tos, you know, Swami's, I can get that at Trader Joe's. I can get Weekend Vibes at Trader Joe's. I can get some hard kombuchas at Trader Joe's. I shop a lot at Trader Joe's. So really, yeah, grocery stores, what's there is what I like.
Yeah, good answer. We should try to get Trader Joe's to sponsor this episode.
Oh my gosh, Trader Joe's, love you.
I know, love them too. Okay, so I have a short lightning round for you. Questions that I wrote down just before this interview. But number one, what is your first food memory?
My first food memory, great question. I don't know what my first food memory is, but I have a couple really strong associations that jump immediately to mind. My mom is, you know, a California native, and growing up on the East Coast, we didn't have lots of Mexican food there. And if we did, it was like ground beef and that kind of stuff. But she makes a salsa that she's like kind of famous for, like, it's just an amazing salsa. And I, for a really long time, tried to kind of perfect it in my adult life, but I have a tattoo of salsa that says Mama D on it. So I would say that that's probably like the food memory that encapsulates my childhood, is just eating my mom's salsa. We would do something called Taco Sundays, where every Sunday, all of our friends would come over and she would make this feast, and salsa was just, you know, an iconic part of that. So I'm going to say that maybe not my first, but my most overarching food memory.
I love that. And the Mama D tattoo. How sweet.
It's very cute.
Oh, I wanted to ask you about your Twitter bio, you're like, it's Beth Demon, rhymes with lemon, not demon. Does that actually happen to you? I mean, it has two M's in the middle. It's pretty clear that your last name is Demon.
So my last AOL Instant Messenger screen name was actually It's Not Demon, because I get so I got so sick of answering that question. And I literally, like a couple of days ago, I was talking to my husband and I was like, I cannot believe that I didn't think to put sounds like lemon on everything until I was like 33. I'm like, since I put that in my Twitter bio, not a single person has mispronounced my name. So I don't know why I missed that very obvious explainer, but oh yeah, it happened my entire life growing up. So
that's so funny. Well, I like our names have a similar sort of pattern, and yeah, I get Totten all the time, which it's like, there's two T's. It's clearly Totten, you know, it's like the short sound, but
anyway. Phonics people, maybe they didn't learn it. I don't know.
I know, we're expecting too much. Okay. What is your San Diego greatest hits tour? Like if you had a friend come into town that wasn't familiar, where would you take them?
That's such a good question. I feel like I get asked that a lot and it kind of changes. I mean, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with North Park, but if you're talking like easy access, walkable, hitting a lot of the hits, I mean, it just kind of has to be that, you know, get a burger at the Friendly, get a Pilsner at Fall Brewing, walked out. Well, I am devastated that Ritual Tavern closed. I mean, this is like years ago, but that was like my go-to for a super long time. So, but you know, you still just walk down 30th and University, you get an IPA at North Park Beer Company. You get a it's like absurd. There's great places all over the county, and it's almost just like you just have to pick a neighborhood and stick with that, because otherwise it's just the choices are just endless. You know, Epig is there, and there's just, oh my gosh, there's just so many good things that like you could seriously eat your way through North Park and be totally satisfied. But honestly, I mean, I love going to TJ. They have so much good stuff down there. You know, Javier Plasencia's restaurants and just the seafood and the beer. And I love it down there as well. So, I mean, if you've got a passport, head down there too, but there's certainly no shortage of things. Or, you know, Barrio Logan is just going off, and I love what's going on there. The, you know, Mujeres Brew House, Salud, Border X. It's just great. Those are two of my just absolute favorite neighborhoods to eat and drink my way through.
Yeah, I love it. I think the crawl is a good suggestion. Okay, what is the best concert you've ever been to?
Best concert I've ever been to. I feel like this is a Ted Lasso question, which I just started watching, but I will say the most fun concert I've ever been to was seeing Andrew WK at the 930 Club in Washington, D.C.
Nice.
That dude rules. So anyway, that was definitely the most just like genuinely fun concert experience I've ever had.
That sounds fun. I saw a picture of him recently and I was like, I wonder what that guy's up to.
Anyway. He just got engaged and it's,
I actually know.
Maybe I really like Andrew WK. He's just like a genuinely good dude. Like I would love to hang out with him. So
yeah, that's so great. That's so funny. Okay. Let's see. Final question. You know, what's something just on your bucket list, something that you want to accomplish in life, but have not yet?
Bucket list accomplishments. Honestly, it's write a book. I mean, that has been something that I have always wanted to do. It almost feels like it's not a choice for me to write a book. I don't want to say my destiny, because like that's a little woo-woo, but just I am a huge reader. I've always been a huge reader, and there is just no greater joy in life than holding a tangible object in your hands and digesting it in your own mind in a way that nobody else can understand. You know, it's deeply personal, but it's also very universal. And so I feel like adding a book to the library of the world is something I've always expected that I would do. And I really hope that this is my first one and hopefully not the last. So yeah, that's probably I could die happy if I know that I'm in a library somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now I have to ask you what your favorite books are, just the most influential books in your life.
My favorite author is Pat Conroy. I love his honestly, it's too long. His descriptions are too long, but they're just so vibrant. My favorite book is Peter Pan. Is that dorky? I don't know, but it's my favorite, so whatever. I mean, I also love Alice in Wonderland. Like, I love historical fiction, but I love fiction in general. I just think the ability to create worlds that are believable, but also fantastical is such a talent that I can't even imagine having, but I appreciate that art form so much. So I love so many. Like, I am a huge patron of the San Diego Library. Mm-hmm. I go a lot. So there's usually a pretty huge stack of borrowed books on my nightstand. I think right now, I've got like 10 books ready to go right now. So I don't even know how to like answer that.
No, that's a great answer. And I feel like a loser because I've never read Peter Pan or Alice in Wonderland. I've like only been on the Disneyland ride. So I have some work to do in my own reading life.
I'm telling you, they hold up. They hold up.
Okay. All right. They're on the list. Well, that concludes the lightning round, but I wanted to ask you about, you know, we talked earlier this year, after the sort of treatment and sexism, you know, with women in the craft beer industry story broke, you were ahead of that story, that you really owned that story. And how has it been going since then?
Slow. It's been going really slow. I actually asked on my Instagram page pretty recently, a couple days ago, you know, how is everybody feeling about the progress or lack thereof since May, you know, referring to the craft beer reckoning that happened. And pretty much the answers that I got from 100% of the people who responded were disappointed, unsurprised, you know, sad that it has kind of stagnated. And on one hand, I understand why, because human beings are not meant to focus on one issue forever. I mean, and even just look at the world around us. I mean, Afghanistan, Haiti, COVID, it's like, we cannot care so deeply as much as we should about all of these things without losing our minds. I mean, honestly. And so the difficult thing about what is happening and what happened in craft beer is that it's not a craft beer problem. It's a society problem. It's a humanity problem. So it's not like craft beer is ever going to fix sexism. It's up to society and people to fix sexism, which is an impossible task, but something we should all consistently be striving towards. So it has been disappointing, but expected the way that it is going. And, you know, we saw some high profile departures, you know, at Modern Times and other local breweries and things like that. But I don't think that I've seen a huge amount of change other than women really just starting to reclaim their power and know their worth and stick to that, which I think is amazing. I don't think that we should have to be the ones doing that, but we are. And so that's the way that it's going to be. And I think that the women who are continuing to fight for what's right and what they deserve, you know, basic human rights and dignity, more power to them. And I'll continue to support them in any way that I can, whether it be just through actions or writing or whatever I can do.
Yeah. Well, you are working on it through the San Diego Brewers Guild, right? You sit on the DEI commission?
Yep. I'm the co-chair of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. And yeah, I mean, it's a lot of good ideas, but you know how it is with committees. It's hard to get a group project off the ground. And so we're certainly chipping away at it and listening to everybody and hopefully, you know, moving towards positive change. I know that it's not going to be fast or widespread enough for some people, but you know, that's where change is going to happen. Also, you know, having organizational support behind individual efforts. And so, yeah, we're keeping up the fight.
Okay, I realize we're running out of time here, but final question for you is, you know, what else are you working on, or what other stories are you following at the moment?
Honestly, right now I'm working a lot on the book proposal, looking at agents, looking at publishing houses, writing sample text, things like that. I am also wrapping up a 4-part series about water in Southern California for Edible San Diego magazine. Part 1 and 2 are live. Part 3 should be live anytime now. And I'm actually about to turn in part 4, really just an overarching look at the history and accessibility and politics of water, water rights, infrastructure, climate change, and how it affects the local beverage community. So talking to vineyard owners, brewers, coffee farmers, anybody and everybody who will talk to me about how water affects San Diego's farms and beverage producers. And so that's been a really long time in the making, and I'm excited for that to be finished. But yeah, still also just kind of the normal beer stories for places like, you know, San Diego Magazine or Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine and that kind of thing. So yeah, I also do podcasts for Good Beer Hunting, where I interview different writers about the pieces that go live on there. So that's fun as well.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you have plenty to do, but I look forward to checking out those projects, especially the climate change ones. It sounds super fascinating.
Oh, I'm like a total ding dong head. I also have a Substack, a monthly interview series where I interview a different woman or non-binary individual working in fermented beverages globally. It's a lot of beer people. It's a lot of cider people. But this next one drops the first Tuesday of every month, and it's free to sign up. Prohibition on Substack, and I hope people check it out, because that's also my passion project is interviewing people who don't normally get the spotlight. And so I hope people check that out.
Thanks again to Beth for joining me, and thank you for listening. You can find Name Drop San Diego on social media at namedropsd, or you can send an email to namedropsd@gmail.com. I'm looking forward to hearing from you, and we'll be back next week.